Hey, yo, yo, what's up, Square Pimp Brigade? On this episode, we got comedian Wally Collins in here. We discuss respecting the older generation, stopping patterns of abuse before you start. We talk about the Chris Rock and Will Smith smack debacle. And we also talk about some really deep stuff about relationships and marriage and commitment. Don't forget to follow us on the Patreon. Check out the support us on the YouTube channel for the clips on the YouTube. Follow our social media, all that good shit. And don't forget, you can get me if you need to consult with me, DanteNero.com. Click on consult and you can get time.
Yeah, and the Patreon.com is where we do the bonus episodes, listener mail, and all that stuff. So extra content if you sign up for Patreon. And this episode, we continue with the Patreon episode. We continue with Wally Collins, where we talk about, you know, what sacrifices you have to make in a relationship, balancing your career and family, and also what Dante thinks about Kevin Samuels. So that's all on the Patreon episode. But until then, enjoy the show.
I'm not an alpha male. I'm not a beta male either. I'm just a better man.
Better man.
Well, put your happiness first, because if you don't, they won't.
Yo, what's up, GYBB? Get your balls back. WWDD, what would Dante do? The sexual revolution being podcasted, and I am excited. We got a special show today. Now, I know I've said that 500 times, Harry? 500 times before?
520 or so, yeah.
Yeah, I know I've said it that many times, but this time, I mean it.
Finally.
Finally,
sincere.
We'll get into it. How you feeling first, Harry?
I'm feeling, what are they saying? Fresh and fit? Is that what the kids are saying? I'm both those things.
That's just a podcast.
Oh, damn it. All right. That's where I get all my information on what the kids are doing now.
What the kids are doing.
It's just YouTube and then the Joe Rogan Experience. So I feel I'm fully informed to do anything. I'm ready for anything.
So you say nigger a lot. Anyway.
Not anymore. As I've learned from Joe Rogan, now you can't say it. Duh. Right, now.
Right, I got it. I get it.
Yeah.
I get it.
2022 is different times.
Let me introduce my guest. My guest, really good friend of mine, dog. I've known this dude 20 years, 21 years.
One of the shooters, baby. One of the shooters.
The original MTV kid when MTV was new and fresh.
Yeah.
entrepreneur, funny dude, classy dude. Give it up for Wally Collins, y'all. Give it up for Wally Collins. Yes. What's up, baby?
You could tell Wally's classy because he decorated his office there with a book on the shelf. You should see some of the backgrounds since we've been doing this via Zoom.
Well, this is I do a lot of podcast guest work, whatever. And so this is my book right here, by the way.
Nice, smart.
Really?
Yeah. And
plug the book, Wally. What is it? What is it about?
Oh, it's here. Let me give you the. See that? It's called the You Never Know Book of Encouragements.
Nice.
And basically, it's encouraging people to live a regretless life.
Mm.
And you know, based on my life, because you know, I don't know if you know, I was a building designer, architect. Then I got, and I was music and comedian. You know, and moved to New York City, had all these successes, and I did it because you never know.
Yeah.
And so it's the all inside here. They're all encouragements.
Oh.
Yeah, and it's all written on the right side because there's nothing written on this side because it basically tells you, I don't want you to look back. I want you to look forward.
Oh, that's dope.
Oh, smart.
That's smart. Dope.
That's very architecture's way of designing a book, by the way, Wally. You want to leave room. You want it to flow. You want this book, the words, you want them to flow.
You got to let the light in.
You need light. You need light.
So dope. I remember the architecture because when we were actually working in the studio, you were looking at the skylight. Remember we were talking about it? I have a skylight that runs through the light comes in through the whole house. But there's so much, you lose so much space from that.
Right.
Because it was in, you know, old architectural stuff or whatever, you know how it is. But yeah, man, it's good to see you, Wally. Last time I saw Wally, Wally's getting ready to choke some young comic.
Oh, boy.
he was being disrespectful. I mean, he was actually gonna he's going to smack him because he was doing some alopecia jokes. But
yeah, before they were popular.
Yeah. But some kids, some, you know, we were talking about the, you know, so there's good and bad in what's happening with entertainment and stuff. Like,
you know,
I feel like that everything is online and everybody's watching everything on an iPad on a phone opens up the ability to, you know, like I always say this with all the streaming, you got a lot of black directors and different ethnic directors and producers and stuff. They get an opportunity to tell their stories because at one time or another, just having black people in the movie made it a black movie, and a black movie was a genre.
Right.
And now there's black horror films, Latino horror films. It's love, you know, like there's an array because contextually there's so much. This we need so much more content than we ever did before, and because of that, it's opening up. On the other hand, we were talking about the kind of the disrespect you get from young comics is because I remember when you would go to a comedy club, or even when you would go to the Cellar, or you would go anywhere, there was a hierarchy.
Yes.
So, and because of the hierarchy, you came and there was a culture that you were indoctrinated into, and because you were indoctrinated into a certain hierarchy, there was a there was a way that you came and you were taught to how to act,
right?
And how to kind of pay your dues and keep your mouth shut until you pay your dues and you earned your game, which is interesting because it's funny. Like, I don't know if you know, there was a whole, I don't know if you heard about the whole thing with T.I. and Godfrey.
No.
So T.I. started doing comedy, and he's been doing comedy for about four weeks. Okay. And Godfrey was headlining in Atlanta, which is T.I. city. T.I. was doing a deal with somebody who actually owned the whole theater. And said, oh, you're doing comedy, you should go up, kind of pushed him to go up. But Godfrey had already did an hour and 45 minutes.
Wow.
And so to kind of go up, you know, there's just an etiquette that you don't go up after the headliner.
Right.
Because there's a certain level of respect and sacrifice you make to become a headliner.
And show flow too, actually.
You know? Absolutely, yeah. That's what makes the show better or whatever. And I even though, you know, Godfrey kind of made he was like, T.I. wants to go up, so T.I. went up and did a half hour after the headliner,
right?
And I get it because T.I. is T.I. and Atlanta's his city. So you might have had to do that, but I, you know, instead of, you know, I felt like instead of saying to T.I., yo, I know this is not really how we do it, usually the headliner, blah, 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 blah. So, you know, in the future, even if you want to come back tomorrow, you're welcome to come back tomorrow, but I'll give you some time in between,
right,
you know, before our headline.
Beat your act, right.
Right, but Godfrey didn't do that, but he went and he kind of went on his podcast and he bitched and moaned about it instead of bitching and moaning directly to T.I. Mm. T.I. and Godfrey has been extraordinarily gotten really big online with his impressions and stuff. So it got back to T.I.
Okay.
And then T.I. came back and it was a whole thing where he was like confronted him, and then I was on a lot. We were all so Godfrey had Ali Sadiq and me come, and then he had
all the members of the five families. That's the five families of comedy had to convene.
And you know, we talked about it and stuff. And one of the things that I was trying to explain to T.I., because, you know, I don't give a fuck. You know what I mean? I mean, people are worried about the goons. I am a goon. You know what I mean? Like that, like people call me. So, but it wasn't even that. I just think if you speak to somebody in an honest and respectful way, that if they don't respect that, then they're the ones that got the problem. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was a whole thing that blew up online. And
how long was it?
This is what, Harry, 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago?
At this point, it's about 3 weeks ago that it went down as of this recording, yeah.
But, yeah, you can. It's still the remnants of it is online and shit. And I had a guy, this guy, K-Dub.
This is how little people care about comedy beefs. It's moved past.
Right, right.
Comedy beefs don't get the respect they deserve.
Well, look, they're almost past this Oscar smack. I mean, I give it another day and there won't be, and people won't be talking about it no more.
Right. Right.
So I think, you know, this the news cycle moves forward. So basically, but what I said was that, you know, and I was just giving him 20-year advice. And I was saying, you know, you have to understand the economy of time. When you first start and you're nobody, you get 5 minutes. Right. And you don't get 7 minutes until you rock the 5 minutes.
If you stink, they'll cut that 5 minutes short.
Cut it down to four. Yeah.
Three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
and then when you don't get the 10 until you get the 7 and all. And so, but what it does for you is the way the things, there's a reason why it's like that, because you learn the economy of time so that now when you have a joke that you're telling that, you know, really would take, you know, an amateur or like T.I. 2 minutes to tell a joke, I could do it in 11 seconds,
right?
You know, 10 seconds, right? 7 seconds, because I understand the economy of time. And I was saying that, and he told me, I'm done talking with you. Your journey is your journey. I was like, oh, all right. So it's interesting to me how people are so confident about something that you do. So I'm actually writing a book now. I'm finally writing a book.
Okay.
It's getting published by Karen Hunter from Sirius Radio. She did Corinne Steffens' book. So this is kind of dope. And she's on my ass, you know, like,
get it done?
Yeah, like she's not playing. And I've been, you know, people have been telling me to write a book. And I never wrote a book because I always thought to myself, you know, scholars and philosophers write books, you know, doctors write books. But this goes to the old school thinking, you know what I mean?
Also, Donald Trump Jr. You know, a lot of crazy people write books.
I think you have to understand, especially
people who don't read, write books now.
I think you have to understand the whole the philosophy behind books. It's part of your legacy, and it's you're documenting your life. You're documenting your thoughts. You're documenting your journey. There are a lot of people out there who are doing that, documenting, who really shouldn't be out there doing that.
Right.
But in your case, you have such an interesting life, and you have such an interesting aspect. Mm-hmm. And this book that you're writing is going to be around long after you're gone.
Yeah.
And, you know, and those who don't, like, for instance, Felicia Collins, who's the guitar player, Letterman.
Uh-huh.
And we were talking, we're talking about how, you know, she's part of history. She's the first, you know, Black woman, you know, to play, and all these artists she played with. And I asked her, do you have a journal? She's like, no, I don't. And I just tripped. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
You know, your journey is like, there's so many Black women, young girls, you know, not actually Black, but
they want to hear this.
Who want to hear that, you know, and want to hold on to that book, you know, and go through those pages for those inspirations. Same thing in your case.
Yeah.
There are a lot of, you know, younger, you know, people with goatees and bald heads who want to, this path seems so difficult, right. You know, and you've been there, done that.
Yeah.
So why not, you know, drop that off, you know, to that young kid or that young one behind you, say, here's a little something. This is going to help you on your journey. So it's almost like a responsibility that you have to, you know, the ones in coming back. And also the responsibility is basically saying, you know, our history, American history.
Right.
So, you know, don't think it's a scholar thing. I think it's a responsibility that you have. to fair enough.
Fair enough. I ain't got no choice because she's on my heels now. So it's
okay. Good.
The inception of it was I was on doing her show, and some dude, and you know, I was talking about how anytime a relationship doesn't work, it's really, I always say it's the man's fault. And the reason why I say that is not because I think that all men make the mistakes, but I think that what happens a lot of times as men, because we want to get the pussy, we're willing to overlook things and to let these red flags go by, as opposed to stopping and saying, oh, this is unacceptable. You know, right. Right. I remember I was dating this girl and she gave me the finger, and I said, don't.
Where she put it?
Well, if it was that easy, you know, but she gave me the finger, and I said, look, don't give me the finger. And she was like, oh, you're getting all sensitive. I go, let me explain something to you. It's disrespectful. I don't like it. I don't speak to you that way, and I expect you to not speak, because I have the maturity enough to know that the buck has to stop there, because it disrespect never happens and then it gets better. Mm-hmm. It's never a one-off. And then,
or even if it's not meant as disrespect, it bleeds into other things and the way you argue and the way you talk to each other.
Yeah.
And when you're angry, then you start taking liberties with things that are okay to do.
Right. Yeah. And right. If you know that that boundary has already been checked, when we're not fighting, when we are fighting, you know that that's just not somewhere you go. And so even if the relationship doesn't
It's the same boundary of if a girl like slaps your arm playfully or whatever, punches you in the shoulder playfully, I got to go, don't do that. Oh, why not? Why not? Because I would never do that to you, number one. And then number two, if you're in a fight or if you get in an argument and then now it's going to get physical because you think that that's okay instinctually, can't happen.
Right.
That's how abuse starts, physical abuse starts. Those are the little red flags. And it's the tiniest and tiniest of red flags. But you cut it off before it grows into something else.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
Hey, Wally, let me get your take on this Will Smith, Chris Rock thing. What do you think?
Man, I can't tell you. Yesterday, Monday, I've got so many text messages and phone calls. And I did like three podcasts. I did an interview on CBS, you know, talking about this. And I have different angles on this, but
well, it's definitely a more nuanced situation than I think people are trying to make it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they're saying that he should have been more sensitive, blah blah blah. But okay, I'm gonna go that angle and saying, hey, listen, Chris Rock was being Chris Rock. Mm-hmm. Chris Rock got there from doing jokes like that.
Right.
He didn't do anything out of the norm. He didn't go any extra. He just did what Chris Rock did.
Right.
Also, the Academy, the production company, they have to screen all those jokes.
Right. Everything is okay.
Right. So he got the green light. So go ahead. Do your thing. So when people are saying, oh, he should be more, you know, sensitive, whatever, whatever. What is, you know, what about Amy Schumer? She said some foul things, too. But you know what? No one to walk on my stage and slap her. So You don't know, you know, what's going to set people off or what is considered offensive to the point it's too much. So, yeah. So no one knew that was too much. So I don't just want to say it's Chris Rock's fault, but everything was just going to plan. You know what I mean? Like I said, there was nothing extra about this. Nothing was said. All right. I don't think nothing was said, but it doesn't seem like it was intentional to like just keep digging. All right. So then that reaction, of course, and everyone, I think, across the board agrees on this, that that action does not merit, you know, a bad joke. You know, that does not equate in any equation, you know?
Absolutely.
So, and then I'm going to go the other angle, another angle where Will Smith is talking about he comes from love. And if he's, you know, this person that comes from love, the way to handle that situation, if I was a person, you know, coming from love and he said that joke, I would have reached over, kissed my beautiful wife's beautiful head and made sure the camera saw me say, I love you. You know, don't listen to that or something like that to show right. that, you know, no matter what is said, I'm protecting you. I'm showing right. that love.
Right.
I really think that everything that he tried to, Will Smith tried to display or try to show people, it all went away.
Yeah.
All those years of manifestation, law of attraction,
yeah.
all that love, you
discipline
know?
And all this. And I'm going to, if I'm running on a treadmill, you're going to have to kill me before
right.
This.
All gone. All yeah. gone. It all now is back to that one, that level, you know, mm-hmm. where, so now, you know, you get insulted and, or you find something that's insulting, you're going to react that way. And like, you know, I've been talking to some, like some major actors, cause you know, I want to get their take on it. And they all say, well, you know what? It was just too much. He had a breaking point. All right. He had a breaking point.
Yeah.
Now, does that mean that when anyone has a breaking point, they can just go off in any place? Kyle yeah. Rittenhouse, he had a breaking point.
Right, right.
You know, it goes on and on and on.
So, January 6th was a breaking point.
A breaking point, right. right. So, you know, do you want to do that and go, no, he had a breaking point. Yeah. And I'm like, no, man, I think there's something more to that. That someone, you know, and then taking responsibility for the other right. man, other ankles, taking responsibility for your actions.
Right.
So he didn't apologize to Chris Rock. He apologized to everybody else.
Yeah.
During that acceptance speech, but not
except the guy Rock. You smacked.
Yeah. And then he did it next day. And obviously that was like, you know, a PR thing. And was that sincere? So that's, you know, that's making me.
I didn't hear the apology to him. What was the apology? What did he say? Or
oh, it was on Twitter. It was written. It wasn't verbal. You know, yeah. and so he can tell, you know, between the lines, look at my mom told me to say sorry, mm-hmm. you know, but, mm-hmm. you know, you can tell when someone's sincere something coming from the heart. So, yeah, man, there's like I said, there's so many angles and so many ways to look at this. And then, you know, coming next February, how's the Academy going to handle this?
Right.
Are they going to have no hosts? Are they going to have no one presenting? You know, are they going to have security? You like this, like the Source Awards now.
Yeah.
You know, and then hold on, another angle. You know, these are two black men. What is that sending out to the world? Yeah. Yeah. And it's produced by a black man.
Right. Right.
You know,
and this is the first time. This is after the two white Oscars thing, and this was the response of this to let a black man produce it, and this happened on his watch,
right.
which is I think a lot of people don't. Take into consideration, but you can't, you know, like I know as a black man, you can't mess up.
No,
you don't have that. You don't have that ability.
No. And I tell my, you know, I tell my white friends, you know, and they, it they're like, what are you talking about? It's not about race. And I'm like, you know what? I just changed the subject because you don't,
not to you guys. Know. It isn't.
Yeah.
you don't even know how deep that is.
Yeah.
That, like for instance, if Obama, you know, only served one term, that would mean only black people are only good for one term as a president.
Right.
That doesn't mean that Barack Obama only served one
term. A man, the individual.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, what we do, and when I was, you know, in architecture, I was the only black guy there. You know I represented every black person on the planet, you know? You know, if I ate a chicken salad every week, you know, they're like, oh, black people eat chicken salads every for lunch.
Is that a thing? Is that a thing that they do?
Yeah, exactly. You know, so I know. And so that's what I'm saying is that, you know, we do have that responsibility. And I hate it, but it's put upon us that we have to represent ourselves. And there we go.
And so, also the other look that's interesting is if you want to know what the world of show business is like and why Harvey Weinstein was able to do what he did. As far as power goes, it's all right there in the fact that Will Smith assaulted somebody. And because he's very powerful in Hollywood and very successful, got to sit right. there and then had people consoling him after he slapped Chris Rock.
And he won.
Well, that aspect of it is already predetermined, meaning like they've already sealed those envelopes.
But let me ask you a question. If it wasn't Chris Rock, it was Amy Schumer and he walked up there and smacked her.
They would have changed the rules.
Still would got that Oscar?
Absolutely not.
They can't. They legally can't do anything about that.
Which
it would have been awkward.
Come on.
So here's when Harry's half a white dude.
No. I get you, but at that point, it's in motion financially for them. They don't give a shit. They wouldn't let him accept it. He would be out of the building.
So was the voters' rights bill.
That's true. Yeah.
So there's always this thing where you're changing the rules.
Well, whatever. The difference is the voters' right is actually on the books. that's not hidden. You know what I mean? That's not, that's just done in public. Yeah.
And it's being done in public. I mean, George Floyd was done in public.
Oh, I agree. That's my point. Is that all that? There's no secrecy to any of that shit. That's done just out in the open.
Even in the aspect of that, we couldn't get a George. You couldn't get a bill. You couldn't even what we're talking about is nothing is sacred. Black people understand that nothing is sacred. None of it is sacred.
No doubt.
They can change the rules at any given time, whether the envelopes are sealed or they're not. The envelopes are no seal. All you got to do is look at Ketanji Brown, Jackson, was it Brown Jackson, right?
Yeah, Brown Jackson, right.
Ketanji Brown Jackson, what they're asking her if babies are racist and then you got Kavanaugh where he's going, I like beer. Do you like beer? Do I like beer? I like the Boof, me, Squeet, Donkey Dick Dave. We did the Devil's Triangle. This is the level of, and they're trying to, you know, to correlate it in the same way. I have a few. Harry, you got any other angles on this?
No, I mean, I think we're going to have similar angles. Other than, for me, it's just the notion of this is a guy. First, he was laughing about it, right? So he was fine with it. And then I think he noticed that this is all a lot of pent-up anger and aggression from not dealing with his own marriage and then being tired of kind of looking like a fool and then having to overcompensate to defend his wife so he doesn't look weak in front of her and the world. And again, you know, it's interesting that he would do it on Chris Rock, of course, after everything, by the way, that's happened publicly and that she's said publicly and done publicly to embarrass that dude. It's the equivalent of taking your girl to a frat party, watching her grind and dry hump everybody on the football team. Then you punch the 100-pound guy walking in the door because he said nice haircut.
Yeah.
Right. Taking it out on somebody else who is not the problem. I don't know, in my eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a bad look for every aspect involved. The culture as a whole, acting as a whole, the whole thing. Him, it makes him look bad. It takes away, it diminishes from his winning that Oscar. It's just a bad look overall.
So I got a couple of angles to this, which I think is interesting. Number one, would he have smacked The Rock in the mouth? Probably not, right? There's a good chance he wouldn't have smacked The Rock. Maybe he might have grabbed Terry Crews' balls. I don't know. Mm. That's possible. But he definitely wouldn't have smacked The Rock if The Rock did the joke. So there's that. You got to keep that same energy. You can't be so for him. And I've heard people say, you know, they were so proud of Chris the way he handled it professionally. Chris ain't got no fight in him. Like, if he gets smacked, that's what happened. He just got smacked, right? So, and especially not against Will. So there's that. Right. The other thing is, like you said, is you got it. You have somebody who his wife didn't even admit that the problem with August and the entanglement, all of that had happened. And basically, they aired their own personal marriage and their whole relationship on the Red Talk table about this entanglement and everything, and basically humiliated. She never apologized. She basically said, I needed somebody to make me feel something because I wasn't getting it from you. She was very candid. She was her veins were filled with ice water. There was no real empathy about how he was feeling. And he was like, we get married, we gonna stay together, da 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 da. And so this is again why the show why there's a need for this for our show is because we always talk about authenticity, credibility, and empathy. Number one, you're saying you have an open marriage, but you don't want an open marriage. You can't say I have an open marriage and then all of a sudden your chick is fucking other dudes, you fucking other chicks, and then you get mad about it. Right. You can go, hey, I thought that this was, I was thinking about this, I really can't take it, let's renegotiate this.
Yeah.
But you can't do both. You can't be this person that's supposed to be so worldly when you ain't built like that. You know, I've had situations where I've been with girls where I swung, but I was always a soft swinger, meaning you want to fuck chicks, you can fuck chicks. We could both fuck chicks. I'm a fuck chicks, but I don't want no dude fucking.
Right.
And people would go, well, that's unfair. They go, well, listen, it's all unfair. It's also unfair every time we go out to dinner, I pay. You know what I mean? So nothing is fair. We decide what our non-negotiable.
It's whatever boundary you're comfortable with. And if they want in on that, that's okay. And if they don't want in on that,
that's
then they
fine
don't have
too.
To do it.
I'm not mad at you. Yeah. It's understanding what your non-negotiables are and then never negotiate. So right. I think he was dishonest about what he could put up and what he could put up with and what he couldn't put up with. Mm-hmm. He also created this facade as if he was this worldly dude. I know people that have read his, I didn't read his book, but I know people that read his book. And one of the things that he talked about in this book was that in West Philly, he was the only dude in the house that couldn't fight. And so he became funny because it was kind of a way of saving his ass.
Right.
What's interesting about that, and that ultimately he really created a scenario where he has these different characters, basically. This is what the book is about, how he has these characters that he plays these characters at different times depending on what the situation is. And that's how he learned to survive as a young man. And it's sort of like, you know, a guy who's a joke thief. Even if he's a talented comic and he's a joke thief, how does he stop stealing jokes after he's been stealing jokes for 25-30 years?
You haven't even
built up the muscle to fail so that you can fail. So he talks about these multiple kind of, which is interesting, because as black people, this is something that maybe something that you probably didn't think about, is black people code switch all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you cannot operate as a black man in America and not code switch. You have to have your white voice. You have to have your, you got to know how to sell it. You got to have your laugh and all that.
There's an aspect of that in the Latino community, too, for sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How you have to behave at work because you have, that's the corporate America.
Right. You can't go orderly, homes, whatever. So
lowriders for the weekends. We all know this.
So you know that the code switching of that, and there's always the code switching present. This is the same thing that happened to Tiger Woods, who basically had created this straight dude golfer, straight dude thing, and then he was running around with trashy strippers all over fucking trashy strippers. Yeah, and we're talking about 20, what was it, like 18, 20 chicks that came down on him. And what happened was, you know, he's driving an Oldsmobile. Meantime, he's like, I never said I was that dude. You guys told me I was this dude. And I, you know, I needed to check. And so I go, yeah, I didn't say no, but I didn't say yes, but I didn't say no either.
Right.
And then when you come out that you a hoe and you running around chasing stank, getting a little stank on the hang down, you know, or you know, this is what happens when, this is why authenticity is important. Mm-hmm. Speaking on that is also part of this idea.
Nobody looks at Charles Barkley and goes, "Hey, man, you're not being wholesome enough."
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, if you're a dirtbag, quote unquote, from the get go, you don't have to worry about the world finding out you're a fraud or that you're putting up a facade.
And this is exactly why I don't lie. I don't lie about the pimping. I don't lie about the stripping. I don't lie about my exploits or whatever. I'm a dude who's living and trying to be a better person. That's it. And wherever I am in that journey is truthful and honest. If you ask me about the past, if I did it, I'll tell you, especially if the statute of limitations is already is already passed. So there's that. So in a sense, you have this guy who has this lofty kind of expectations from people that he feels like he needs to live up to and validate this over and over again. And he's created this prison, you know, it's a rich prison, but it's still a prison. And you know what they say, the golden handcuffs, they're gold, but they're still handcuffs.
Right.
And So there's that. So you have this situation where you really haven't expressed how you felt about this entanglement, this humiliation, yeah. this emasculation that you've done, and then this is building up, and then we're gonna stay together because we're gonna build this together, and that's not really what you want to do. Right. He didn't slap Chris Rock. He wanted to slap Jada. That's the smack was for Jada, really. That's the and Chris Rock made it easy to do so. Like you said, or like you said, I said the same thing. Amy Schumer wouldn't have got snapped. But yeah. Neither would Ricky Gervais have gotten smacked.
Yeah.
You're not, as a black man, you're not going to go up because somebody told a joke and assault. And this is what people, I don't think that people understand, that the Ricky Gervais was brutal on the Oscars.
Woo!
Golden Globes, but
called,
yeah.
Well, whatever. He did a bunch of things, but he was called them pedophiles.
And, yes.
And the fact that he didn't call them pedophiles, he called pedophiles the way British say it is really.
Well, in all fairness, what language is he speaking? Who started it? It is English. So he might be right. In all fairness,
pedophiles. Fairness,
let's remember the name of the language and who's speaking it.
To be honest, I don't care what you say. I'm not going to say aluminium, so oh, I don't Jesus. Care what you say.
Oh,
fuck
my goodness.
That. It's aluminum. So, would Will Smith have smacked Ricky Gervais?
No.
And had he have smacked Ricky Gervais, what would have been the ramifications of him walking up and smacking a white man on the Oscar stage?
Yeah.
How devastating would have been? I mean, of course we know a woman, it wouldn't have been okay for
it would
a
be
woman.
The end of his career.
But him
smacking a woman, yeah.
It would have been fine. It would have not been fine if he smacked Ricky Gervais. And then you also not going to smack somebody like The Rock who got this smoke for you too. How about that? So
wait a minute, Dwayne Robinson.
Yeah, Dwayne The Rock.
Dwayne Johnson.
Dwayne Johnson's got a problem with Will Smith.
No, I'm saying
the point is if it was The Rock hosting,
if he was doing and said something, Will would not run up there and smack that dude.
Yeah, gotcha.
Because you don't want to get you want to get broken.
Right.
So, you know, it's really, here's the other thing. Everything up to him smacking him, even if he would have went up on stage and whispered in his ear, "Keep my mame's wife out of your motherfucking mouth," even that would have been okay.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that would have been fine, yeah.
Even if he could have also said, "Hey, listen, this is a touchy say. I don't think it's tasteful, and I'm going to need you to apologize to my wife." Even that would have been okay. Then you have black women. I'm not talking about Yamanika specifically, but about how black men don't stand up for black women, this, that, when 85% of all black men are with black women. So, yeah, I mean, there's this ultimate narrative. But if you're going to be dishonest about forgiveness, if you are really not going to forgive, if you forgive, you got to forgive and move on. But you can't forgive, but he had created this such a lofty, kind of highly evolved man that should be.
Well, here's the weird thing. Here's the thing. I believe that Will Smith has evolved from when he was a young man.
Absolutely.
I think what we saw at the Oscars was not Will Smith. I think that's the facade, is the character that went up there and slapped him across the face and started screaming. I think that's not Will Smith. I think that was a facade put on because he's got to stand up for his wife in public.
I have another theory. I've noticed that when Will Smith plays a character, he embodies that character. When he was playing Ali, all his interviews were kind of like this gregarious kind of like this bigger person, because he was Ali. So like, you know, not when he was, you know, in front of the camera, so to speak, the shooting the film, you know, when he was off camera and when he was not shooting, he was still that. Yeah, and I really think that he was still embodying Richard Williams in that, you know what I mean? He was still that Richard Williams character. Because I really believe that's something Richard Williams would do, is go back to someone saying,
"That's
hey,
interesting."
Listen.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know?
Yeah,
I really think that Will Smith was embodying Richard Williams. That's my theory.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
It is, except for me, when I watched the playback on it, and we've all watched it like it's a Zapruder film over and over again.
I can't watch it. I have not watched.
Well, one of the things that you might see is after Chris Rock tells the joke, Will Smith is laughing. And he's not like a little, not like a like he is full on laughing. Like,
well,
he's
like,
hey, it's all in.
You dip,
you could argue that, all right, I was in.
You dip in and out of that character. Cause I mean, you know, I play characters, you know, not to sound like, you know, I'm just a great thespian, but I know that, you know, if you're going to be convincing, you know, even before, you know, they say action, you got to get into that character. And then when they say cut, you know, you got to roll out of the character. It doesn't necessarily stop like that.
Right.
So
you know, and so, you know, this, well, you know, what would Richard Williams do if he feels his family is being threatened?
It's interesting. You know?
And then that's basically what he did. He came out as, you know, as Richard Williams.
Yeah.
And then he turned back around, you know, did the action happen. And I really think that kind of took him out of character. And as he turned around, walked around, he was Will Smith.
Yeah.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar wrote like a really long post about it, which was amazing. Just breaking down every aspect of why it was not good. The whole thing was bad. It's bad for African-Americans. It's bad for Hollywood. It's even bad for women. It just shows his wife can't handle a joke. She can't fend for herself. He goes, it's just bad all the way around. Yeah. You know, it's bad for pacifists, the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's just a bad look overall. And it, just some it, shit.
She also could have made an effort to put grab him and pull him back. Like, don't go. She could have done that. She could have grabbed him by the sleeve and stopped
him. But you know what? But no one really knew that he's going to go up there and smack him either.
No, but even
Chris especially, Rock, least forward. Of all Chris Rock, because he thought he was just playing around.
Yeah, because Chris Ford leaned forward to say, you want to tell me something?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, had his hands behind his back and he leaned forward. So it's like, there's a, but this is a, what's also interesting about this is, you know, this talk of the fact that how women are not empowered. She literally had him on a remote control with a look, with a, shot him a look, and he
set him off.
Set him like, follow, what do you want me to do? What do you need me to do to feel comfortable? And so this is
because
something-
in that moment, and this is what men put themselves into. In that moment, it's better to go on national TV and slap Chris Rock at the Oscars than it is to ride in that car ride home. It hurt going, so you just did
he
nothing.
He had to weigh his options.
Right. Yeah. He's like, well, I guess I'm slapping. I guess I'm going
to
jail for assault.
Somebody. Yeah.
Sorry, Chris.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, but this is what happens when you're in a relationship and you're dishonest. You're dishonest about who you are. You're dishonest about what you're okay with, what you're not okay with, you're going along, and you're, you know, and then, and also, you got, sometimes you got to go, if you're too sensitive or too, like, every guy is not built for every girl. There's, I know women that are man eaters, like, where a dude is just too kind and too nice, and if he's, you go, like, I mean, we were, you know, before we were on, we were talking about somebody that we both dated that was a succubus, would just suck the, you know, this girl that we, Wally and I dated. I said,
Not
at the same time, but I asked him afterwards, yo, you know, this chick you dated, and Wally, and I quote Wally said, yeah, I learned so much from that relationship. He goes, I've never in my life thought that a woman could be that selfish. Like that was his takeaway. It was like, it widened my scope how awful and how selfish a woman could be. I never even thought that was, and I always remember that, how, because my thought was, is it me? Like, I mean, I can't be like, am I this off? Is my read this far off?
And every once in a while you'll ask, you go, is it me? Am I wrong? Am I off on this? And I'll be like, no, if you're asking, I know you. Yeah, if you're asking, you're generally not off.
She was putting up a certain facade about her.
Yeah.
You know, and then behind closed doors, it was just so awkward. It's almost like almost that code switching, you know, like, oh, am I doing that now? Oh, you know, I didn't hear cut. So, but anyway,
yeah. How you and your lady doing?
She's, we're good. She's at work right now, not here. So,
Yeah.
It's going to be 20 years this year.
Really? Congrats, man. Yeah, congrats. Thanks. What have you learned from the 20 years? I mean, or has it just, or had you kind of learned what you needed to learn before you got in there?
Man, how long's this show?
We can get whatever you get in. Let's get it in.
All right. If you are committed, if you're truly committed and saying that I want to do this,
yeah,
I'm going to say that being married is a very, it's very, very emotionally expensive. It costs a lot emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
And there is, it's not, you know, because when you're saying these vows, whatever, you don't really think that the things are going to happen, you know, sickness and health and rich and poor and all those things do happen.
Right.
And so now it's a matter of, we're going through this storm.
Mm-hmm.
Are you taking the lead or am I taking the lead?
Right.
You know, and sometimes your ego's got to step back, you know, and let the person do it. And this person's going to do it and fail. And are you going to, you know, just ridicule them? Like, oh man, I told you to do it this way, da 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 da. Or step back, I got that.
Right.
So it's all this learning, and people change too, their attitude towards things. Like, you know, that they're you know, when you got married, met them, they had this dream to go this way. And then once you get married, something may happen. It happens to all of us. They don't get to go this way, you know? And then you're like, do you still want to be married to this person? Do you still want to be part of this person's life because they're going in this direction? And then, you know, there's always health. You know, your partner's health may fail.
Yeah.
And so now, are you going to stay with this person because you said in front of God, in front of family and friends, through sickness and health? Are you going to stay with this person?
He owes me $5, though.
What'd you say?
God owes me $5.
Oh, all right. But yeah, it's a thing where if you're committed to this person, people gotta understand commitment, you know. And I think what helped me is that I travel a lot, and so, you know, we don't see each other as much,
mm-hmm.
and I think that helped a lot. But it's still work. It is still work, you know. And it's all those other aspects. And then when COVID happened, you know, you're stuck in this.
The intensive, it's much, so much more intensified.
Yeah, you know, and you then, like, you know, how do we handle that? You know, luckily, I live in this great apartment. You know, my apartment is 1,800 square feet. Mm-hmm. So she actually texted me one time to meet me in the living room for lunch.
Uh-huh.
She was on the west side of the apartment. I was on the east side. I'm like, you know what? I was like so grateful for this apartment. You know?
Right.
I wouldn't see it for hours. So anyway. But
who are you, Batman, Wally? What's going on? The East Wing.
But you know, but it is one of the things where a marriage is that people change, and people don't understand that part. People are going to change because you evolve, you know. Because I know I evolve, and so now, is this person going to stay with me because I don't want to do this anymore, or I want to do something else? And same thing with her or him. They don't want to do that anymore because they want to go here.
Right.
And also, you understand women. You know, even women, how they work and their function, whatever, you know. So, yeah, man, there's a lot to it. And I tell people, really think about it. Really think about you want to do this, you know, because it's a commitment. And now not only you, every decision that you make is going to affect your partner. Right. Same thing with them. Every decision that they make is going to affect you. So you sure you want to do this?
Right. Right, right.
I feel like as a man, for me, the hardest part is that my decisions do affect somebody else. So now I have to think about somebody else all the time.
Right.
And in reality, she wants me making most of the decisions. Most of the time, a woman wants you to lead, whether consciously or subconsciously, to a degree.
Right.
And that becomes hard because now you got to make decisions for her, and you have to think about what's best for her benefit in spite of the things that she might say that contradicts the other things she's requested as well.
You're preaching, brother. Yeah.
You got to think about yourself, herself, and then herself again. It's crazy.
And then if you have kids.
Oh, forget it. Oh, yeah. I can't imagine. You got kids. How many you got, Wally?
No, we have kids. We just have a 7-pound Yorkie that keeps walking.
Oh, that's easy enough.
Yeah,
Jesus.
Yeah. Even that, you.
Yeah, I mean, still, but having a kid there, at least the Yorkie you could leave alone, or they can leave you alone for a little bit. But
right.
The kids, now you got to make sure you got kids. Now you got to make sure somebody's not dying.
Yeah.
That's what kids are, is a sack of flesh that's trying to die at any given moment.
Potential death, right, exactly.
Yeah. Just don't die. That's all they know how to do as a baby, right out the womb.
Wally, we're going to do something for the Patreon, a little keep going, but plug your book and plug anything you want to plug or anything sort of.
Let's see. Well, this is my book. Yeah, this is my book. It's called The Inevitable Book of Encouragement. You can get it on.
Why Inevitable? Why?
You never know.
Oh, okay.
Did you not? Oh, man.
My mother gave me advice. She gave me three words. You never know unless you try. And so I just said, you know what? I'll just make it into one word. You never know. And that was my mantra for all the things I've done in my life.
Right.
Big news that I'll announce on your podcast. Lincoln Center has started a comedy department. And I'm the curator. Yep. Your boy's curator for comedy.
Hook me up, baby. Get me in there.
We're doing right now, we're doing a 8-week series in the summer, and they're actually building a comedy room. And it's pretty cool. And so now you got to understand, this is Lincoln Center. So there are a lot of, like, you know,
people.
Yeah. So it's got. All
right, well, I guess I won't be with you.
They'll fit you in by 2027 when they're fully comfortable.
The people that I'm suggesting, they kind of like, it's a process. But I produced two shows there called Jokes and Jazz. I don't know if you know about that.
No. But
yeah, it was jazz and comedians, and both shows sold out. And so they offered me the gig earlier this year. And yeah, I jumped at it. I'm like, yeah, definitely. You know, because
I can't think of anybody better to curate
That's
Wally.
Perfect. Yeah.
That is right up Wally's right up the avenue.
I'll clean it up for you though, Wally. Okay. I will clean it up for you.
All right. But the series starts January. It's going to be Wednesdays, 8 Wednesdays in the summer. Mm-hmm. It's going to start June 15th. And you'll be hearing about it. We'll be posting it, you know, on my Facebook, Instagram, Wally Collins, WALI.
Wally is the Wynton Marsalis of comedy.
Nice.
And
you're gonna start doing heroin like Miles Davis, are you, Wally?
No, I can't. Oh,
it's too late. Like I
said, it's very exciting. And
congrats, Wally. You deserve it.
Thank you. So yeah, you're the first one that I announced on the podcast. I did a podcast, two podcasts yesterday, but I said, nope, this is for Dante.
Thank you, bro. When did you actually find out?
I found out in February, I believe.
Okay. That's so dope, man. I'm happy for you, bro. You know, I love you to death. Hey, and you deserve the absolute best. You good dude. Like, really good dude. Harry, talk to me real quick.
You could check out my stuff at Harry Turjanian all over the place. YouTube, TikTok. Subscribe to the TikTok. That's where I'm doing most of the new stuff. But most importantly, sign up for Man School 202 on Patreon. We do bonus episodes, listener mail, and we're going to do some bonus with Wally right now. So
yes.
Only available on Patreon.com.
You know me. Google me, bitch. You know what it is. Don't forget DanteNero.com. Click on consult if you want to book time with me. Don't forget our YouTube channel. Don't forget the Patreon. Really important that you do that because you help us keep doing what we've been doing. We're 9 years in, Wally. 9 years doing this podcast. GYBB, get your balls back. WWDD, what would Dante do? The sexual revolution is being podcasted. I love y'all, man. Check us out on Patreon after this. Peace.